League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Fans, welcome into the Green 19 podcast from JS Online and PackersNews.com. I'm Cassidy Hill, joined as always by Tom Silverstein and Ryan Wood here in our Lambeau Field office, where, guys, we are barreling down towards the end of training camp here in 2023. Just wrapped up Wednesday's practice at the time of recording this. Still have a Thursday practice, and then that's it for training camp, right? At least as ipso facto as it's labeled.
You could say today was official. And because, at least for public practices, there's no more public practices. And tomorrow's probably just a walkthrough or something like that. So,
yeah,
it's no, it is tomorrow, but it's weird that all the public practices are done.
This month just flitted right away.
Yeah,
it used to be that way, right? Because, like, next week's considered camp, but it's closed.
Yeah.
And week one is the week after. Next week's the cut down, and they're full schedule preparing for week one, but I feel like it used to be more public practices.
Well, yeah, with four preseason games, yeah. So they kept it open during up to the fourth preseason game.
And they had a week in Cincinnati that took away public practices from here. So, anyways, like we said, one more to go, but no more open to the public. Let me just get your general takeaway from what you make of the 2023 Green Bay Packers based off what you have seen in training camp. Spoon?
There's still a lot of things that I want to see, but I would say that I've been more impressed with the offense than I thought I would be. Mm-hmm. I thought they were going to be really a work in progress throughout camp. And then probably by midseason, then we'd know a little bit more. Now, that's not to say they don't come out and the Bears just shut them down. But I see the things LaFleur is doing offensively. It's less complicated, and it leads me to believe it's more of his system. And so I think more than anything, we're going to get kind of a referendum on how well he can game plan and implement his system.
There's a massive caveat before I say this, and that's we have not seen Jordan Love against defenses that are scheming specifically for him. We haven't seen that, and that's a huge difference. It's like being a batter in the batter's box, knowing what a major league pitcher is going to throw to you and taking a swing at that as opposed to having to guess the count. It's a major difference. But that said, the last 2 days, Jordan Love's looked pretty good. He's looked good in both preseason games. He's looked better than I thought he would coming into camp. And he's looked better than even the start of camp. But the last 2 days, I'm on the sideline thinking to myself, he looks better than the first week. Like, we've seen him grow even from the start of camp. And it's to the point where I don't know how high the ceiling is on Jordan Love. It might be high. It might be not very high. I don't know that. But I don't think he stinks.
Right. He's not – we don't know how good he could or could not be, but I think it's safe to say he's not bad.
He doesn't look bad to me. Now,
no.
We'll see what happens when he gets schemed against, because I don't know. But you see the talent. He has a firm grasp of the offense. He knows where his checkdowns are. We know that. Those are all positive things. So, I think the over-under win total is 7.5 for this 2023 team. Coming into camp, I would have thought there's a real chance of being under that. Now, I think there's a real chance that they can maybe win a game or two more than that. It's not a hard schedule, and I don't think they have a terrible quarterback. He's something better than that.
You looked like you wanted to add something to that a second ago.
No. Well, I don't think Jordan Love stinks, or I think he's displayed the talent that they saw, and that's what I've seen, that he does have a lot of talent.
You made a point about, like, the offense is better than you thought they would be. Last year after training camp, we thought this defense was going to be world beaters and one of the best to play the game. So how do you know what's just camp progress versus real progress?
I think what stood out to me is offensive line play, that and it's not just the preseason, it's that they played, you know, they had some practices against two very physical defenses, and Jordan Love was not, it wasn't, you know, like open gates, floodgates, you know, he had a lot of time to throw in a lot of these situations. And if that's the case, if that line can play, you know, as well as they did in the preseason, then he's got a lot better chance to succeed.
The interesting thing about that is that a lot of that has been without David Bakhtiari. Mm-hmm. I mean, he has practiced and played so little. He was on the field, took some snaps in the opener at Cincinnati. But otherwise, he's not been on the field much. And they've got a lot of offensive tackles. And that's a good thing to have. They're thin in the interior, but they have a lot of offensive tackles. They've got a guy at right tackle who's going to start, Zach Tom, who can slide into any of the three interior spots, and they have the tackle depth to compensate and be able to do that. That's a good luxury for an offense to have.
I will tell you one thing, though, that if I were LaFleur and I saw that, it would concern me a little bit about Tom playing right tackle, and that is that Rashawn Gary threw him around like a rag doll. Mm. Rashawn Gary is extremely strong, mm-hmm. but so are, you know, some of the big-time pass rushers that he's going to face. And I'm wondering if that's a sign that eventually, you know, these big guys who are rushing from the outside are going to be able to take advantage of his size, and maybe they do have to move him inside. I don't know. It was Rashawn Gary. He's got fresh legs. He's all pumped up. You know, he beat him in one-on-ones the first day, just destroyed him. And then today I saw him just pretty much pick him up and throw him. You know, I mean, it was really physical. So if I saw that and I was LaFleur, I'd be like, okay, let's see how that goes.
And we had not really seen that until the past couple of days, because Rashawn Gary hasn't been able to take part in team drills, or had he been doing one-on-ones or just individual?
No, nothing. This was the first time he took one-on-ones was Tuesday, Wednesday.
Yeah, so maybe a test that Zach Tom had not faced yet. Right. I think I would be also more interested to see how he comes back on like a third day. Has he figured out some of Gary's tendencies and moves? How does he respond to that? But you're saying it's also just pure strength.
Well, yeah, and maybe it'll be different because during the course of a game, you know, guys wear down, and Rashawn Gary is boiling, you know, to get into these kind of drills. So it might not be indicative. I'm just saying, if I saw it, it would make me wonder.
It's a really good – I was wondering the same thing, because on one hand, Rashawn Gary is a different dude. Like, the speed to power move that he put on Zach Tom today was just – it was hellacious. That's a Rashawn Gary move. On the other hand, it's his first time taking one-on-one drills since missing the last half of last season and getting off of the ACL recovery. I don't know. I don't know if that says more about Zach Tom or Rashawn Gary, but I'm inclined, Spoon, to agree with you that's for a guy fresh off an ACL, you don't expect him to be at peak form yet.
Hmm. Definitely something to watch as we do get into practice next week, especially after the cutdown day. After that cutdown day, it'll probably be easier to watch too, because there's not as many bullets flying, not as many guys to keep an eye on. Is there anyone in this camp that maybe, and I'm going to guess we all have the same answer, is there anyone in this camp that maybe surprised you, that you came into camp not knowing anything about or not expecting anything from, and now you're sitting there going, wow, that guy really impressed me?
I'm going to say Malik
Keith. I was like, let's all say it on three.
I'll let you go with Malik Keith. I'll come up with another answer.
I mean, you know, I thought about Carrington Valentine, but he's a draft pick, and you expect something out of him. And Malik Heath, I didn't expect, I don't know, he's just a guy. You know, they sign afterward, and he's big, and he's not fast. And, boy, he has made them keep him. Mm-hmm. And that's the story. I didn't see that coming.
That's impressive for an undrafted rookie, too. And seventh-round rookie, yeah, Carrington Valentine has shown that he can cover. He can cover starting receivers. And, you know, he's still a seventh-round rookie. There's going to be growing pains, but he can hold his own, and that's impressive. I'd say maybe to flip your question, a guy that I am surprised I didn't see more of is Tarvarius Moore. Mm. And the reason being, I kind of expected him to be right in the mix for that on that bubble, a guy that could maybe compete for a starting job. And it's been a lot of Rudy Ford. It's been some Jonathan Owens. It's been like one day of Tarvarius Moore as a first string safety. And the very next day, I think it was Rudy Ford back out there on the field. So I was surprised that we didn't see more first string reps and opportunity for him.
I think they found out exactly what the 49ers decided after a year of starting, is that he's a good special teams player.
Mm. Yeah. I'm not going to go with somebody different. I'm sticking with Malik Heath, too. I want to go back to, like, a podcast that Ryan and I did after maybe rookie minicamp or early OTAs. Spoon, I know you were gallivanting during that point. And we talked about Malik Heath because he stood out that early even. There was just something about him that he drew your eye. You couldn't help but watch him. And, you know, you've got guys like Emmanuel Wilson that have impressed. I feel like there's somebody like that every year, though. Malik Heath doesn't feel like a camp flash in the pan to me. He feels like something that he's not going to be Devontae Adams, but this is something sustainable that they need in that wide receiving core.
The difference is, you know, Emmanuel Wilson's a third running back, and it's in a league that's devalued the position to an extreme level, and Malik Heath isn't. But, you know, what stood out to me in the spring was only that Malik Heath was getting all these first-team reps. And I didn't really see, you know, they weren't in pads, so I didn't see anything football-wise, but it was very noticeable, all the first-team reps that he was getting right out of the gate as an undrafted rookie. Like, huh, you don't see, sometimes you see guys rise in camp. You don't see an undrafted rookie in the spring program. But I think that we've seen in camp that he is a big physical guy. He is a playmaker. He makes plays. The chemistry that he has with Sean Clifford, because that's who's gotten a lot of his reps with, is very noticeable. The 25-yard reception really stood out to me against the Patriots, where Sean Clifford throws it up in a crowd of Patriots, and Malik Heath comes down with it for 25 yards. I asked Malik Heath about that play today, and he said, look, Jason Vrabel says, Packers receivers coach, the DB's back's turned, that's your ball. You catch it. And like, okay. I mean, that's his mentality. So the guy's got a playmaking knack, and there's a lot of trust in him as an undrafted rookie.
Spoon, what did he tell you about that play, too? That was a great line.
He basically, you know, we were talking about how it looked like Clifford was throwing it to the two Patriots guys, and he said, you know, I just decided, well, I'll just throw my hat in the ring. I mean, he didn't say that, but that's kind of what he said.
Just throw my head in there.
Yeah, and see what happens.
Just see what happens. And yeah. Now, look, he's messed around. He's probably going to make this 53-man roster.
I think so. I don't know how much it'll help him during the regular season, but he, you know, he's got a chance to be active because of his special teams play.
I think he makes it. And I think it's also very important to remember that whatever the roster is next Tuesday is the initial roster. Mm-hmm. But you can't try to sneak him through to the practice squad right now.
No, I don't think so.
Somebody's picking him up.
I mean, if they were willing to keep Samori Toure last year, who didn't do near as much in training camp as Heath has, then I can't see them getting rid of Heath.
I think he's probably, when the season starts, the sixth receiver. I think that Samori Toure is the four. I would imagine that Dontavian Wicks is probably the five. It's probably close.
They gotta keep him healthy.
Yeah, that's the thing.
He's just in and out all the time.
When he's been healthy, he's made plays, but you're absolutely right. His injury status has not been ideal. But I would think that once the – and then the question to me is, do they keep seven with Grant DuBose or do they stick with six?
I think Grant DuBose has shown enough to be worth like another look, but that's so many receivers to keep on one roster. And I think that they could sneak him through to the squad. To the
They've done it squad. Before, though. Seven is their limit, their max capacity. They've kept seven, I think, on multiple occasions before.
Question. If they keep seven, do they go with three tight ends instead of four?
I sure think that that's what it's going to look like.
Good. That's a little dangerous, especially for someone who likes to use tight ends like LaFleur. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Usually, you know, that if you keep three tight ends, usually that's an extra running back, you know, mm-hmm. so then you keep it because they're typically more of a special teams type of player, like mm-hmm. a tight end. I also think there's a chance, depending on how Wicks's injury is, they could put him on IR. Mm. I don't know if it's an IR injury, but I know teams slip guys through mm. that way, and he's been out for almost a week.
Yeah.
Well, he got hurt in the Patriots game. I'm sorry.
Yeah,
so it hasn't been quite a week.
But a week of practice.
There's no sign that he's coming back anytime soon. So
I think to answer your question, Cassie, I think when you look at the short list of guys that it's a really big preseason finale for against the Seahawks, Austin Allen's on that list because three tight ends is really thin. But he's got to show it's not about making plays in the office. He's got to show that he can play teams.
That was where Tyler Davis's bread and butter was.
Exactly. And what Rich Bisaccia say, it's like losing right-hand man with Tyler Davis going down with the ACL. Austin Allen's going to have to show that he can play teams, because if you're going to be a fourth tight end on a 53-man roster, you have to play teams.
I mean, don't forget, there will be some guys who are good special teams players who get cut, mm-hmm. and they'll be on the waiver wire, and some of them will be tight ends. So you never know. They could pick someone like that up, too.
Let's talk about someone else that we might possibly see go on IR. We were talking about this earlier, is Tyler Goodson, the running back, who was sort of that camp darling last season, and this year has split those ropes with Patrick Taylor and Emmanuel Wilson. Tyler Goodson was walking around in a sling for a while after that Bengals game. He told both Ryan and I that he was going to be playing on Saturday versus the Seahawks. We want to place our bets on whether or not that's happening. I don't see it happening.
I don't see it happening either, because if he gets further, you know, if he gets hurt further, it costs the Packers more money. You know, and believe me, they think about that. Like, okay.
Like, why would that be the case?
Because the injury settlement. So let's say the injury, he aggravates it and hurts it more. And now he's out for 6 weeks or 8 weeks. And then they have to pay him for those, make a settlement. They cut him
like
now.
Like a roster player?
No, they have to pay it. They have to settle with his agent. They'll cut him, they'll waive him injured, and then they do a settlement based on how many weeks of they think it's going to take. They negotiate back and forth, and then they come to a sum, and then he gets cut. And then the Packers can't bring him back until, if they wanted to bring him back, they can't bring him back till like 3 weeks after that amount of time you negotiated is over. So, you know, they're thinking about that. Like, okay, do we risk putting him in there on the first play, gets hurt, and then, okay, well, or do we just, you know, cut him now when or in a week and pay a week settlement and then see where he is, you know, in a month or something like that, and keep Emmanuel Wilson as either the practice squad guy or the number three.
It's an AC joint sprain is what Tyler Goodson told me today, in his right shoulder. It's not his first. He had, as a junior in high school, he sprained his left AC joint. So he's been through it before. He said point blank to me today, yeah, it's going to be one of those things that lingers throughout the season. And he's right, because, I mean, Jair Alexander missed – basically an entire season with a very similar injury, probably more severe, because it's not all AC joint sprains are the same, but it's not an injury that just goes away. So, you know, talk about terrible timing for him. He had that big practice before Cincinnati, had a touchdown in the preseason opener, was really finding his rhythm and his groove, and looked like he might be a camp darling, and then he goes down and it's Emmanuel Wilson. So, it opened an opportunity for Emmanuel Wilson, but for Tyler Goodson, just terrible timing for him with that AC joint.
Is this a team that can afford a third running back? For as much as we talk about who could be the third running back, does it actually happen?
No, we don't need to talk about it. I mean, A.J. Dillon and Aaron Jones are going to eat up all the snaps. Mm-hmm. They don't need a third guy unless, you know, they can have one on the practice squad and bring one up if they need them. That's what they did with Patrick Taylor. Mm-hmm. You know, they would bring him up for special teams reasons, and then when he ran out, did they sign him? I think they signed up. When they ran out of the eligibility to make him a game day elevation. So, we may be just
drawing.
Yeah, we may be barking at the moon on this one.
Let's talk about A.J. Dillon for a second. Before training camp started, he, running backs coach Matt LaFleur, all talked about needing to see more power from him again. Like, Dillon admitted this, that he needed to have more power. Like, he told us that his wife flipped on the tape from his Boston College and then his rookie and second year in Green Bay and said, this is what we need to get back to. Like, whatever you were doing last year wasn't working. We talk so little about these running backs because they're just such a sure thing in our mind. Have you seen stuff from A.J. Dillon through? I mean, Aaron Jones has taken one rep in each preseason game, and then it's been A.J. Dillon for pretty much the rest of the first quarter, or at least when Jordan Love was in. Through those two games, through practice, have you seen anything from A.J. Dillon that makes you think, hey, he might be kind of returning to form, or I don't know if that would even be the phrase, becoming the power back they need him to be?
He gave Brenton Cox Jr. quite a shot today on a dive play to the left side. That was impressive. But for me, and I thought he ran hard against the Patriots, for me, running back is just such a difficult position to really evaluate for the same reason that all of defense, except for maybe pass rushing, is a really difficult position to evaluate in camp, because so much of it with running back is, can you not get tackled? Mm-hmm. And they don't tackle in camp. And so much of it for defense is, can you tackle? Because you can be in the right spot all you want, but if you can't tackle, that's not good defense. So I think we're going to find out more in September. But, yeah, I mean, you're right. He needs to lower the pads more.
That's what he's here for.
Yeah, what I've seen, the difference that I've seen with him is that he's a little more patient, waiting for that cutback, and he's really emphasized putting that foot in the ground and then exploding out of that. That's what I've seen. So when there's any kind of hole, he's not hesitating. He's not running into guys trying to run guys over. He's trying to see the hole and going. That's what I noticed. I've seen some really good runs in practice. And then, you know, there's times where he's not Aaron Jones. He's not going to bounce outside and get a couple extra yards. So the hole's not there, then he's just got to put his head down and go. But I see a guy who has been told or figured out himself that he does need to get back to putting the foot down and then exploding through the hole. Stop pussyfooting around. And I think that's what I've seen so far.
Hmm. What do they say? A running back is a quarterback's best friend, especially a young quarterback. So for Jordan Love in his first year, you need both of those backs, especially for a balanced attack.
No question.
I think they showed against the Patriots exactly what the ideal blueprint is from an offensive approach this season. First three plays, all runs. They picked up 16 yards. They just ran downhill. They just ran right at the Patriots. And everything else orbits around that. That is the foundation for what they want to do. Yeah, you're right. That only can help a young quarterback.
I think they're gonna run. And then, you know, if it gets to third and long or whatever, or third and six, they're going to do checkdowns until they can get the defense to pull back in and stop playing deep for Christian Watson and Dobbs and eventually Musgrave. And so kill them with 16 play drives. I think Love seems disciplined enough to be able to do that. Rodgers couldn't, you know, or wouldn't. You know, Rodgers wanted to hit a big play. But getting Dillon and Jones out in the flat is you can get 5 or 6 yards a pop on that. So that's kind of how I see it. Like, they're going to run. Then if Love doesn't see anything, he's he's dumping it off, and they'll just try to get drives going until they can get the defense.
Know what that sounds exactly like, and I know we've made this comparison before, but that sounds like 2019 49ers.
True.
And they rode that offense to a Super Bowl.
Yeah, and they had a tight end who could split the middle of the field. That was their big thing.
I'll say this. If he's healthy, I think Aaron Jones is going to set a career high in catches this year. I think he's going
Didn't
to get
he
a lot
the team
of targets.
In receptions last year at one point?
Jones?
Yeah, I think he did.
He might have.
I think he had close to 50. He's been having close to 50. Yeah. I think he's going to be over 50.
I think it went back and forth between Jones and Tonyan most of the year as to who had the most. But what do they say? The run sets up the pass. You never go broke taking a profit. You hand it off to your running backs and they pick up 6 yards at a time. That moves the chains. And you can grind it out. Speaking of those 2019 49ers, I'll never forget they had a game. Actually, it might have been 2020. They had a game where they had like a 10-minute drive. Like that wears a defense out physically and mentally. And so to your point, if Jordan Love's willing to do that, that could help this defense a ton. Just to keep them off the field.
Yeah, and think about it. How many teams are going to, bring a safety up in the box? They're going to say, let's keep both safeties back and see if Jordan Love can beat us. See if he can get the ball to Christian Watson. And then, when they bring a guy up, then fine. Once the Packers start running the ball, and they bring a guy up, then he's got to be able to, hit the ball down the field a little bit.
So you think defenses will go light box to start the season?
I think so.
Even with these two backs?
Yeah, I was kind of thinking the opposite.
Yeah, as I'm saying it, I'm thinking maybe it's the opposite. But but teams tend to not want to commit unless they have to, unless there's a reason. And why give Jordan Love – the possibility of a single safety with Christian Watson.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And to that
I don't
point,
know.
We talked a couple of weeks ago about how for as much as, check downs can move the offense, then in this league, y'all both made the point, you've got to be able to hit that downfield pass. Feels like we've seen them at least attempting it more and more here. And both Christian Watson and really Romeo Doubs has shown he is really dependable down there.
Sorry, that was
kind of my point. I feel like we've seen that more in the past couple of weeks, them making a concerted effort to work on that deep shot.
I've been thinking these past couple of days that he's grown since the start of camp, he has grown the most since the start of camp is downfield. Mm-hmm. I mean, he couldn't buy much of anything downfield, and he's been getting chunk plays in the passing game. Some of these things are on, kind of deeper slants. It's not all go balls. But they've been getting chunk plays these last 2 days on this Packers defense in a way that they just weren't through that first week. So you've seen that growth.
I also see them playing three wides a lot to mm-hmm. start and running the ball off of three wides. That'll be their way to try to influence teams to keep two safeties back and then running it. One tight end, one running back, and just see what they can do, do all the motion. I've seen some interesting plays, this past week with what they've done with screens, that screen to Aaron Jones. That was really – and then there was
Did
one
you
today.
Did call that a screen?
Yeah.
Sorry. Pete and I were going back and forth about that in practice just because of where it was on the field didn't compute in our mind with where a screen normally is.
Well, a screen is when you bring players to one side of the field mm-hmm. – to set up a guy to run behind. And that's exactly what they did. And they did it again today with A.J. Dillon. I don't know if you see, that was a play that Savage got hurt, bumped into
Dobbs.
Yeah. But that was set up perfectly because they sent a guy in motion and they I don't know. It was just a really nice looking play. So I'm kind of curious how they're going to look, I've seen some interesting plays.
Do you think that 11 personnel is a byproduct of having really young rookie tight ends, too? Because, that's, to me, kind of a fascinating thing. I feel like Matt LaFleur in his best version, his purest version of his offense, wants to go a lot of multiple, wants to go a lot of 12 personnel, having those two tight ends on the field. But they're rookies. and it's going to take time. And Jaden Reed, for a rookie, he looks like he can just slide right into the slot. And to your point, running out of 11 personnel can help produce lighter boxes. So I think that's going to be really interesting to see how long it takes to get to that.
Yeah, if I'm them, I want Jaden Reed on the field because he can make teams punish teams for staying with a single safety deep. Mm-hmm. You know, of course Watson can do it, but if that single safety is kind of shading to Watson and you got Reed, you know, doing those deep corner routes, I mean, he wins on those a lot. Mm-hmm. You know, now it'll be different when the game plan and everything like that. But if I'm them, I want him on the field.
And when he needs a breather, to your point, ever since you've said it, I've been watching more and more. Samari Torre can do it.
Yeah, he can do it.
Mm-hmm.
So you've still got someone that you can slide right in there. And to your point, Ryan, until you can feel more comfortable with both of those tight ends on the field. Let's flip to the other side. One of you mentioned Darnell Savage getting a little banged up today. We've said over and over there's a lot with defense you can't really talk about during this time of year, but safety is something that we've all kept an eye on. And guys, they're going into the final preseason game and they're a week away from cutdown days, and I don't know if they even know who their starting safeties are yet.
This is the reality of the landscape at safety right now, is that they cannot afford to lose Darnell Savage. I mean, think about that.
Yeah, a year ago you would have laughed.
Yeah,
at that.
That's where they're at. Ah, boy, that's and look, Darnell Savage has a lot of talent. I've said it over and over and over again. He has potential. He is the fastest player in their secondary. If he could ever cover the deep ball, he's got the speed to have range. There's potential there. But from what you've seen out of Darnell Savage the past couple years, it's needed to be more. And where they're at right now is they absolutely cannot afford to lose Darnell Savage at that position.
You know, I've thought that Rudy Ford was a box safety the entire time that he was here, but he kind of showed that when Savage is up in the box, that and he's in the deep middle, he can cover ground side to side. You know, he's not a real shifty guy. He's got tight hips. You know, he's not going to be able to cover in the slot or anything like that. But side to side, you know, he showed in last year, he had those interceptions where he made up some ground. So I wonder if they play Savage less deep and try to put him a little bit more, you know, up and see how that goes.
He's always been better closer to the line of scrimmage. I thought he was better as a slot corner last year, and he still struggled. He had a pretty miserable year, and he was honest and open about that in the spring. I thought he was better at slot corner, closer to the ball, than he was certainly at deep safety. Rudy Ford, week one starting safety?
I don't know.
I say yes.
I would think so.
I don't think it's Jonathan Owens. I don't think it's Tavarius Moore who's hurt. It's not Anthony Johnson, that's for sure, the rookie. Who's left? It's not Rasul Douglas.
It's not Daniil.
We've got to give that up.
Daniil Levitt.
And unless they can figure out someone who gets cut, someone they could trade for, I don't know.
I don't know. With Owens, I think they want it to be him, but Ford is someone they at least know can do it. Mm-hmm. You know, he's going to be serviceable out there.
And yeah, so, yeah. Owens is a box safety too. Mm-hmm. He can't cover. He cannot cover.
With that in mind, do you put him out there with Savage, knowing that you face Justin Fields week one?
Put Owens.
Yeah.
That's a good question. I don't know.
The other thing I'm wondering at that position,
I'm not sure that Owens makes the team.
Yeah, that's what I was getting at.
That's the other thing.
I'm wondering if there's a surprise cut there. I mean, the way, and I got.
I don't think that's a surprise. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but I'm not sure that's a surprise.
Maybe the answer here really is that the starting safety week one is not yet on this roster.
That's very possible. Or at least, you know, Ford starts and they bring in someone who they want to, you know, work in.
So I've got not to have you guys do my work for me, but I got, you know, this roster breakdown coming out Friday morning, and it's, you know, locks, good bets, on the bubble, long shots. I've got, like, other than Darnell Savage, I got, like, and Rudy Ford's probably a good bet. Everyone else on the bubble. Like, I don't know what to make of that. That position is just so, it's so opaque. It's so, you can't, like, there's no clarity there. It's nothing but ambiguous to me.
No. Yeah. Right now, I would say Anthony Johnson, Savage, and Ford are going to make the team. Anthony Johnson on potential, because you can see he's really athletic, but he doesn't know anything about playing safety.
He can play special teams.
Yeah.
Same with Levitt.
Right.
Levitt, Versace's going to make sure Levitt is on this
Correct.
Team.
Here's another question that we haven't considered, and I know that Joe Barry said no, he's a linebacker, but do you move Tariq Carpenter back to safety?
I don't think they're going to do that.
I don't think so either. I don't think he has the flexibility, you know, to do that. He's a big, strong guy and great box. Probably would be a good box safety.
Well, that's what he came in as, right? As
yeah, in, but in the NFL, you can't be just a box safety. You know,
that's a linebacker.
They yeah. take advantage of that. They're through motion and all kinds of things where you're going to have to play both sides.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to have to play deep sometimes. And I don't know if you can do that.
Hmm. Last thing before we do wrap up here. Have you seen Anders Carlson progress enough to not worry if you're the Packers?
Well, I'd always be worried. He would be my kicker on opening day. And but I would always be worried. And I would, at this point, even if Whelan has out-punted O'Donnell, and I'm not saying he has. He's been good, and he's got a great leg. I think I keep O'Donnell because of his holding. And
veteran.
There's just not a big difference. He can calm that guy down, Carlson. You know,
and he knows, to the point, his holder, it's not even just the holder. He knows these stadiums that they're going to be walking into.
Yes, he can help with that. The other thing is that O'Donnell is phenomenal at getting the ball down fast. And that's better for Carlson. Any kind of disruption seems to screw him up. You know, anything where the snap is a little high or a little to the outside and his timing gets, it seems like that's where he falls apart. If the operation is good, then he seems to be good.
It's kind of like what we were talking about during the offseason about bringing a veteran backup quarterback in for Jordan Love, and they're not going to do that. John Clifford made sure they're not going to do that. But that idea, it's similar to me to having Pat O'Donnell as your punter holder and being able to have a veteran next to Anders Carlson, because I think the Packers just know what this season's going to be for them. There's going to be rookie pains. It's going to be up and down. They are committed to him. I think the ironic thing is he's probably the only actual lock in the specialty room. But he is. They're committed to him because he's got a big leg. He's got I don't know if it's unique, but it's at least a rare leg. There's not a lot of guys with his kind of power. So if he gets it, you don't want to – with a guy who's got a kicker that's got a lot of potential, you don't want to give up too early. Daniel Carlson, Anders Carlson's older brother, showed what happens when you do. He's an all-pro now, got released as a fifth-round pick as a rookie early in this rookie season by the Vikings. You don't want to give up too early. But they know that there's going to be some moments. There's going to be some groans this year. I think they just they know what it's going to be.
I think they're prepared for that with this whole team, which is why they're prepared for that with kicker. To borrow a quote from our colleague Pete Doherty, the sands in our hourglass have run out here. But I'm going to give you each your final 60 seconds as we wrap up training camp here. Ryan, why don't you go ahead and go first?
Yeah, I want to give a massive congratulations to my sister and brother-in-law who found out a couple days ago that they are having twins. And it's kind of unbelievable. My entire family's shocked because I have twin boys, and it's the same exact situation. I had my oldest is 11, and I've got 9-year-old twin boys. My sister and brother-in-law have my wonderful niece, Nora, and she's about 2.5. And almost 3, and now they're having twins. So both identical, and if you don't know, identical twins is different than fraternal. Fraternal can be hereditary. Identical twins are just potluck, but here we are in the Wood family. We've got two sets of twins on their way, and could not be more thrilled.
You got any twins coming, Spoon?
No, a little old for that. I don't have a lot to say other than training camp whipped through. You know, it really did go fast. And, you know, before you know it, we're going to be in week one. And so, I want all this other crap to be over so it can just go to to the games. You know, I mean, it's good to do cut down day and the blog will be fun, mm-hmm. but fun, you know, we're dealing with a bunch of guys' lives, you know, but I'm almost like, I think two preseason games would be enough. You know, if they could do 5 weeks of camp and, you know, and then onto the, and two preseason games, Godspeed.
Do you have fun with any blog? And I'm not just talking about cut down day blog, but it looks like some ridiculously hard work. I couldn't do it. I mean, it's a must follow if you haven't. Like, Spoon in the blog is legendary. But is that fun for you? Because it's just like it's like steam coming off your computer.
Sometimes it's fun. Sometimes it's aggravating. Sometimes it's like I don't have my groove going, and the software's not working the way I want it. And that's the biggest problem, is that the software we use is not made for blogging. It's made for commenting, and so it's really clunky and. My brain wants to go faster, but I can't, and that kind of screws me up. But, I like doing it. I like watching the game as best I can.
And then, I don't know how you do it. It's
and
incredible.
Then saying right off the top of my head.
It looks hard. Hard would be the word. And you've mastered it.
Well, I've been doing it for a long time,
it
too.
It looks really challenging.
Well, that's a great plug to tell you that Spoon will have his live blog going on Saturday during the Packers.
On Tuesday for cutdown day.
Yeah.
Starting at about 6 in the morning.
6 in the morning?
That's when we usually start.
Godspeed. Yeah, let me know how it goes. Mm-hmm. Spoon will have his live blog going on Saturday, kickoff versus the Seahawks at noon here at Lambeau. And we will have full wrap-up coverage for you following that game and then dive right into what will be a hopping roster cutdown day. Only one cutdown day this year. Makes it maybe a little bit easier. Just do it all at once.
That's a lot of names for us to chase.
That is a lot of names. But we will have full coverage for you on PackersNews.com. Guys, thanks so much as always. Until next time, this is the Green 19 Podcast from JS Online and PackersNews.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.